let him tell you.
My family was an addict named George. You know, I want to thank God for allowing me to get safely over the highways and the byways. And I want to thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to be used as an example of the power of the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I want to thank this area for inviting me up and giving me an opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. My name is George J. I'm from the It Works group. We meet on Wednesday nights in Pittsburgh at 7 o'clock in Homewood. If you ever in the city, stop by. I'm always there because I've made a commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, if you're new, welcome. The program of Narcotics Anonymous really worked. And I've seen all this youth in the back because the only way we keep what we have to give it away. And one thing I know about us old-timers, once we get a girlfriend, a car, some money in the bank, our ego and our images come back and denial sets back in. The only person we can get this message back to is the newcomer. I want you guys to know in the back that you are blessed to have the experience that you have. It took me to the age of 31 to like wind up in a rehab where the program of Narcotics Anonymous was introduced to me. And as I sat in that program, I theorized what recovery was all about. But when my feelings got in the way, I was unable to work the program. And I wasn't able to work the program because I didn't have the support in my life. I didn't have an understanding of this program, and God wasn't ready for the light switch to get turned on in my life. Because what I really realized today that God turns switches on in your life. And when he's ready for you to get it, you'll get it. But you're in position to get it. Because I can remember being 31 years old, played every card that I had, and the only thing I could fall back on was remembering that there were some people in a program called Narcotics Anonymous living a new way of life, laughing and smiling, getting all those things that I wanted, but I could always get but couldn't hold on to. I saw these people holding on to these things, and I wanted that back again. So I began to do what they did. And what I began to realize and understand about myself is that I am a spirit, that I'm physical, that I'm mental, and that I'm spiritual. And my spirituality is based on what I'm centered in. And I was centered in drugs from the age of 13 all the way up to the age of 31, and it ruined my life. It damn near killed me. And I'm going to try not to cuss, too. Because cussing is a big part of how I carry the message. And a few people told me that wasn't very spiritual. But I'm centered in Narcotics Anonymous, and this is a God-given program. You know, and that's what I believe in. You know, but getting back to my story, I can remember growing up being introduced to drugs at the age of 13. Just wanting to be a part of. Didn't understand, and I believe, because I read the literature, and I believe that I was one of these people that suffered from the disease of addiction long before I picked up the drug. I was totally self-centered. I was caught up in raging self-obsession. And if you don't have an understanding of what raging self-obsession is you being afraid of what people are going to think of you. That's all raging self-obsession is. You being afraid somebody's going to know what's inside of you. You being afraid somebody's going to know your secrets. And for some reason, you become very paranoid. And anytime people were close to me, outside knowing the truth about me, I became very angry and resentful. Or I switched up and became very passive and became a people pleaser and just did what everybody else wanted to do but really didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? That's the type of person I was. Somewhere I heard that I became a chameleon. I did what was ever comfortable. I start ignoring my spirit because my spirit is like what always talked to me. I can remember being 13 in the joint and the wine was coming around and my spirit said, George, don't do it. Uncle Ducky is going to whoop your ass. And I ignored my spirit. And I hit the joint. And it wasn't a pleasurable experience for real. The first time I really got high, it was nasty. Wine tasted nasty. I didn't know how to inhale the marijuana. And I was full of fear after the party was over because I had to go home and face my family. But what ended up happening to me, it wasn't a pleasurable experience using the drug. The pleasurable experience was the camaraderie that I had with the fellas. Me being accepted by 15 and 16 and 17-year-olds made me feel good on the inside. But I had a distorted perception on reality, and I connected the drug with the situation. But it was the camaraderie I had that I fell in love with. But I thought I needed the drug to continue to capture that experience. I distorted reality, and I began to use. And I began to realize who I really am. I'm an addict. And addicts love things and use people to continue to use things. But I lost the ability to love as a result of using drugs because I had gotten intensity and intimacy mixed up. Because we're supposed to have intimate relationships with people. And the first time I hit that weed, I had an intense feeling and fell in love with the intense feeling that I got from the drug and fell madly in love with it. Now, I share, when you have a love affair with marijuana, you save the seed. And you tell lies to hide the seed because you was in love with the intense feeling that I got. And what I begin to realize and identify as a result of the first time I used, I lost my freedom. Because I lost the ability to talk to my mother and my aunt and my uncle about what was going on with me because I had a secret. I had used. My spirit had told me, don't use, it's going to get you in trouble. But I ignored the spirit. And every time I went back to that distorted belief that the drug gave me, the spirit got quieter on the inside. Before you knew it, I was living to use and using to live. And my disease began to grow. And I began to put combinations of drugs to hide the ultimate person myself. See, a lot of things happened to me as a result of me running around with people older than me. You know, had my first sexual experience the first time I got high also. I was 13. And I can remember this little girl was chasing me. And I was really afraid of girls and shouldn't have been fooling with girls, but it was my peers. And my peers were people older than me because I never liked living in the skin that I was in. When I was 12, I wanted to be 14. When I was 14, I wanted to be 16. When I was 21, I wanted to be 31. I always wanted to be somewhere other than where I was at. I was never comfortable in my skin. And like, I was running around with my 16-year-old cousins, and they were chasing girls at that time. Because when you're 16, you're supposed to be chasing girls. But I'm 13, and I'm making accusations at girls. And this girl was like 14 and hiding the pants, and she was after me. So I'm playing around with my cousins, and I eventually end up using. And she ended up catching me at the house one day and said, I'm coming down here to give you some. And I became very afraid. Very afraid. I wanted to run. And I ran up the steps to run from her. And my cousin said, you got to go down there and do that or you'll be a sissy. And I needed to be accepted. And I needed to be a part of. And I went down those steps, still kind of intoxicated from that drinking experience that I had. And I went down and had sex with that girl. And that girl said, boy, you rock my world. But the disease of addiction was talking to me long before drugs became a problem in my life. The disease of addiction began to talk to me through my low self-esteem. The disease of addiction told me it was the wine you drank that made her say that. It wasn't you. And I bought into the lie. From that day forward, I believed I had to have a drug to have an intimate relationship with a person from the opposite sex. I ran for more sex than I got because if I couldn't have the magic elixir in place, I didn't believe I was worthy enough or good enough. Even though people told me you was good enough, the disease of addiction always told me, George, you ain't good enough. You need something extra. And that's when I began to use. See, I always shared that I got high in the 6th and 7th grade, but by the time I was in the 10th grade, I was using. Because using is having a belief, a deep-rooted belief that you need something outside of you to be okay. And when you have a deep-rooted belief that you need something outside of you to be okay, you're using, no matter what it is. And I began to use by the 10th grade. And when I couldn't use, I would go through withdrawal. Now, I always share that I had a problem with weed. A lot of times we want to identify at the end of the road. See, I need to go back and get the little boy and understand what really happened to George. At the age of like 14 and 15, I had become dependent on drugs. I had become dependent on weed. And with the literature talking about who's the next, we are men and women to put the welfare and put using in front of our lives. And anytime, I'm from Homewood, and that's one of the roughest parts in Pittsburgh. But anytime weed would run out in Homewood, I'd be willing to go on the north side looking for weed, putting my life on the line because I come from a city that you stayed in your little community when you was a youth. You wasn't supposed to be venturing out into other parts of town because you threatened to get your ass kicked going on other parts of town. But when there wasn't no weed in Homewood, I was willing to put my life on the line and go to Manchester for some weed. So weed was a problem. I began to identify that. Weed stopped me from meeting my personal responsibility. The theme of this convention is the journey continues, and what they said, the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom, right? So on our assembly, we're talking about God, self, society, and service. I really had to get in touch with self, man. And through the 12-step process, I began to identify what was going on with self, man. I was a little addict. living to use, using to live. I was a wounded spirit a long time ago. Man, my spirit began to get wounded long before cocaine showed up. My mom wounded my spirit. Not intentionally. She wounded me by leaving me over and over again. A child needs his mother and his father. Regardless of what my mom was doing, I missed her. I was depressed because I wasn't connected to her. She put me in foster care. I was fucked up, excuse my language, but I was fucked up long before I picked up drugs because I was detached from my original sponsor, my mother and my father. They weren't in my life. I got put in babysitters babysat me. And babysitters, it's only really about the money. It really ain't about love, at least in my experience. It wasn't about love. It was about getting paid. And they had bad days, and me and my brother would get beaten. My brother's an addict also, but he had 6 years clean also in his program, believing in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm blessed like that. But getting back to my story, I can remember, like, being wounded. And I can remember, and this was a beautiful experience coming up here this weekend, I seen a lot of unity. When I heard I was coming to Laurel Highlands and I came over 601, I was scared. I checked my cell phone and made sure I had service every hill I went over because I was afraid. I didn't know what I was getting into, but I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. If NA calls, I will go in spite of my fear. But I was afraid. And I didn't know what I was getting into, but when I came up here and I arrived, this is a beautiful thing. I saw unity. I saw black addicts, white addicts, fat addicts, straight addicts, crippled addicts, you know, any addict. This is what this is really all about. Putting our issues aside and coming here, joining together for the common good. Our thing is to carry this message to the addict that still suffers. It has happened here. I've heard a lot of great messages this weekend, and I have identified with everyone. No matter what I heard, I can relate and identify. And that's why we come to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, to relate and identify with each other so some healing can take place on the inside. See, when I begin to get honest, our fifth step talks about this is surgery of the spirit that happens here. Through honest sharing and identification, my spirit begins to heal. And I heard a lot of good stuff this weekend. You know what I mean? I love Narcotics Anonymous. It has brought me back to life because the disease of addiction was slowly trying to take my life. But going back into my story, man, I don't even remember where I was at in my story. Mom left. Mom distorted my beliefs. Because I always shared that when I saw my mom's womb, I had spiritual principles in my life. I knew about humility. I knew about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I knew about truth. But truth, honesty, and open-mindedness and willingness wasn't paying off. I can remember, and I remember sharing in Indiana, PA, and I identified with John. John reminds me of my first best friend. His name was Delaney Arrington. He was a little white guy. Me and Delaney would ride horses, and we rode mini bikes together, and we did a lot of things together. See, I told you I had a younger brother, and he was a bitter little guy. And he would start a lot of trouble. And I can remember he was fooling around with Delaney one time and smacking him. He violated Delaney. Delaney had the right to defend himself. Delaney kicked my brother's ass. And my brother went home, and my mother told me that I should have defended my brother. She began to distort and corrupt my spirit. Unintentionally, man. I knew Delaney was right and my brother was wrong, but my mom punished me for that. And I began to shut down a long time before I picked up drugs. I began to shut down from my mom. I began to shut down from spiritual principles because of what was being taught to me. My spirit said Delaney is right and Bruce is wrong. And I shouldn't have been defending my brother. My brother was wrong. He deserved to get his butt whooped. And probably if he got his butt whooped, he might have changed because pain makes people change. Consequences make people change. Not enabling, not bailing people out, not letting them do the same thing over and over again and believe, telling them that it's okay. So my mom began to corrupt me, her and her friends, and I felt bad. I felt attacked. I went and isolated with those feelings, man. And I learned not to be honest. I learned how to, like, do what was comfortable. They said the broader the base, the higher point of freedom. I grow through vulnerability. You grow through getting uncomfortable. When I pay attention to my spirit, a lot of times what my spirit is telling me ain't in style. It ain't fashionable. You know what I mean? But every time I pay attention to what my spirit is telling me, I continue to grow. But I learned how to shut that off at a very early age. And drugs became very comfortable for me. So I use like everybody else does. You know, I live to use and I use to live. And all drugs that I use caused me problems. But by the time I was 31 years old, I had a bunch of bad information and I was shut down on the inside. And I want to read something because I believe in the literature. The literature helped me bring me back to life. This is January the 10th. They said, if you don't take chances, you can't do anything in life. Many of us have done things that in looking back seem insane or dangerous. We may have had friends or family members who got into serious trouble and frightened us by their risky behavior. Out of fear, we may have became too cautious about everything. Our dilemma is that growth is a risk, too. If we don't avoid all risks, we become stagnant. Life thrives on possibilities and options. Of course, risk means the outcome is unsure. We may not get the results we desire, but not all risk taking is as self-destructive as it was in the past. Now we have our relationship with ourselves and our higher power. Now taking a chance may help us grow, even when we don't get what we want. It's all about taking a risk. And I'm here to share with you newcomers, man, just about taking a risk on Narcotics Anonymous, if you're here. Take a risk and buy old-timer, newcomer, some-timer, whoever's here. It's about taking a risk on this program. When I begin to take a risk on the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I begin to receive the freedom that this program offered me. Now, I told you a lot of things about me growing up. The disease of addiction for me is about a bunch of symptoms. It ain't about drugs. Drugs ain't my problem until I use. It really ain't my problem for real until I smoke. My thinking and my feeling and the way I cope with life for 31 years, I believe, is my addiction, because my disease knows my past, and it's always trying to take me back to my past and ruin my present. That's the disease of addiction's job. The disease of addiction don't know my future. It can't predict what's going to happen in the future, but have you ever noticed it always has you reminiscing in the past? Always trying to take you back there. That's my problem, man. My thinking and my feelings. My feelings will take me back. My feelings will make me give up. I'm a very fragile person. That's why it's very important for me. When I got to this program at 31 years old, my spirit was bankrupt. And I put my spirit in this fellowship. And I just kept my spirit around this fellowship, and my spirit began to feed off your spirit. And as a result of me feeding off your spirits, I began to become healthy, and I began to become alive. See, I'm going to tell you what I got when I first got to Narcotics Anonymous. When I became afraid of myself, I was a condition to change and grow. Because when you ain't afraid of you, you can run off your own values and beliefs. I needed to be afraid of George. So I put my spirit around you people in this fellowship, and I began to come alive, man. I was around people that played big whiz. I don't play big whiz. They was playing spades. They was going bowling. I didn't do none of that stuff. But you know what? They still fed my spirit. I stayed around them long enough so I could make some of my own choices in this fellowship of who I wanted to be around. But the most important thing is when you come in this fellowship, if you're in this fellowship, when you are wounded, put your spirit around these people in this fellowship, you'll start healing automatically. And one day you'll know that you'll be able to choose the people that you want in your life that's doing some of the things that you would like to do. Now, I didn't understand the disease of addiction when I got here. I thought it was about drugs. I got here, man, and after the absence of the pain from smoking crack and sipping dope left, you know what I mean, my old attitudes, my old ideas kicked back in. And the first thing I wanted to do was feel good. And what I thought would make me feel good was an ego-inflating situation. I really didn't want sex with the girls, but I wanted to fool you people. I always wanted to have illusions. I love my wife. I got to Narcotics Anonymous, married for 7 years. I really didn't want to cheat on my wife. But I cheated on my wife as a result of people-pleasing issues. This literature began to tell me that people-pleasing led me further into my addiction. When you begin to people-please, you begin to abandon your own values and your own beliefs and your own wants and your own desires. Because you're afraid people ain't going to like you and want to be around you. And I did that when I got here. I didn't want to be a player. I thought I did, but I didn't really want to. But I felt that I had to be a part of this fellowship, and they was laughing at me. But it's the truth. A tape ain't nothing but a tape. You take a tape of, what, the Moody Blues in 77, and you throw it in a box, and you pull it out in 2002, it plays the same message. It's just in a different year. We are the same people, man. We play the same tapes over and over in our mind, and we just come here and we're just clean. And the tapes that I was playing always put me in pain. They always brought unmanageability in my life because they were my old ideas, my old attitude, and my old belief system, and it automatically brought me pain. I got to NA and I wanted to be a player because I thought I had to be. And I took my wedding ring off, and I got into this fellowship, and I thought I had to be a man. Afraid of intimacy. Couldn't handle the wife that I had. What made me think I could handle somebody else? But this thinking told me, man, you better get with them so you can be a part of, so you can be down. Because I was afraid of spiritual people when I first got here. People that talked about God, I was afraid of. for some strange reason, I was afraid of God because I was ashamed of who I was for 31 years. I was ashamed of all the lies that I told. I was ashamed of the checks that I wrote. I was ashamed of not keeping promises. And I was ashamed, and it detached me from God. I'm here to share with you that the disease of addiction ruins relationships. And recovery put relationships back in your place. I told you the first time I used, I lost a relationship with myself because I had a secret. The first time I used, I lost a relationship with my mom and my uncle because I used. When I used, I lost a relationship with God because if you notice you're doing something wrong, you can't pray. That you can't acknowledge God when you're doing something wrong, you're afraid to get down there. Because somewhere in dogma, they said a lightning bolt will come strike you in your ass. So, you know, at least they catch me when you can. You know what I mean? So I began to live like that. And you know what? I lost a relationship with the people in my community. Because they said, you got crackhead George running up and down the steps 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning. I was a nuisance. That's what the disease of addiction did to me. That's what using did. It separated those four basic relationships that make you feel good on the inside. And recovery is about putting all those relationships back in place. And when you can get all four of those relationships back in place, you have a sense of well-being. I feel good about myself. But it was through Narcotics Anonymous that I was able to get those four relationships back and feel the freedom that this program offers us. I'm free, man. And I'm free because I begin to give up my secrets. I'm free because I begin to work the first step. And my first step really is all the things that I've been talking to you about up to this point. And they made my life unmanageable because they were all the things that I believed. And those are still some of the things that I still want to believe. And the first step talks about we got to change everything about the way we think or go back to using. And I really believe everything the way I think, some things the way I think still work. And the addict ain't going to stop nothing that's still working. That's why I believe in sponsorship, and I believe in fellowship, and I believe in God that, you know what, the literature even told me you can pray over an addict, you can lock them up, you can put oil on their ass, the addict will not stop until he's ready to stop. Sponsorship don't intimidate no damn addict. When the addict is caught up in the feeling, they got to burn themselves out on that feeling, and I'm supposed to be a power greater than, and I'm supposed to be loving, caring, and understanding, because if I'm really loving, caring, and understanding, I should be understanding that I suffer from the disease of addiction. And that's the disease of addiction, that I can get caught up in something and can't let go until pain, misery, and suffering come. And I need this fellowship not to judge me, but to love me and wait for me and share their experience with me if they got that experience. But you can't tell an addict what to do. All you can do is wait for them. Somewhere in the literature talks about when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And all I'm supposed to be is, in the beginning when I was a newcomer, I was supposed to go to the light, and one day I was supposed to be the light. And I can't be a self-righteous light. I got to be a loving and caring light. But it took time. It took experience. It took losses for me to get where I'm at today. It really did. So you know what? I was powerless over my addiction. It was my attitudes, my ideas, and my behaviors. And I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I quacked like everybody else because we just want to be a part of so damn bad here. Once I put my spirit here, I begin to feel good here. I begin to mimic people here. I begin to tell people I had a God of my understanding in my life when I didn't. And I'm going to tell you something about me for real. To really get this program, you got to want to. I heard Angel talking of that. You got to say, look, I want to be down in this damn fellowship. So in order to be down, I need to learn this damn language. You know what I mean? Because all addicts want to share eloquently. And we want to, like, be in position because we got ego. I ain't ashamed to admit that I got an ego. And I want to be one of the best. It's not the best. That's just the way I've been made up. But it pushed me to read this book, and it pushed me to practice spiritual principles. And it put me around people that believe the same way I believe, because water seeks its own level. For real, it really does. When I want to be a player, that's all I attracted. And when I want to grow spiritually, that's what I begin to attract in my life. And when I begin to attract spiritual people in my life, the path grew smaller. It really did, and people talked about me. But I was powerless over that stuff. But I came to believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I came to believe in all that Narcotics Anonymous talks about. Narcotics Anonymous talks about the ultimate weapon to recovery is another recovering addict. And it don't tell you it got to be a white one or a black one. It has to have 5 years. It said the ultimate weapon, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And my first friend in Narcotics Anonymous was a homosexual. And I'm not homosexual. And this fellowship bashed us. See, this fellowship is tough. It's tough to stay in this camp. But when you stay in this camp and go through the adversity, you grow stronger on the inside. Because an oak tree appears to be stronger than a palm tree. Huh? It's an illusion. But when a storm hit, An oak tree will fall fast, but a palm tree will only bend. So I was rooted in somebody that believed in God. I was rooted in somebody that believed in talking about their feelings. Because me being around that brother, tell me to talk about my feelings. I ain't got to talk about my feelings. Something about that brother, he was in tune to his feelings. And as a result of me sitting there, I began to get in tune with my feelings. Because what I always wanted to do was deny my feelings and bury my feelings and bury my pain. And this brother was just talking about his pain and talking about his feelings and talking about his hurts. And I'm like, shit, I can relate. Some of them same things that happened to him happened to me. Prejudice, being laughed at, got ran home by the bully. I mean, I could feel him. I was feeling him. I didn't let my ego run me away, and I let this fellowship run me away because that brother was feeding my spirit. He was feeding my spirit. We began to grow together. We had a pretty close amount of clean time, but he was in tune to his feelings, and he helped me to get in tune with my feelings. And me and this brother journeyed on this recovery for about 7-8 years. He's still one of my best friends, and I love him. You know what? This fellowship is so powerful in persuading and influencing people, man, and sometimes it's dangerous. That's why you need to learn how to unclutter your spirit and pay attention to your spirit. I told you I got here, I was married. Me and his brother were so close. I was talking to Walton earlier about intimacy. It's something that we want so bad, but we're so afraid of. And I really couldn't get intimate with my wife until I learned how to get intimate with men. And intimacy ain't about sex. Intimacy is about being able to talk about what I'm thinking, be able to talk about what I'm feeling, being able to share with somebody what hurt me in the past, being able to share with somebody what I'm thinking about is going to hurt me in the future. That's how intimacy began to grow in my life. And I began to get it with this brother, man. And this fellowship bashed us. Oh, they're fucking. You know, my wife, we were so close. It was so therapeutic that my wife even began to question my manhood. And it hurt. And it hurt real bad. But you know what? I didn't kick her to the curb, and I didn't kick him to the curb, and I kept growing. Because I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And when I made a decision to put my will and my life in God's care, that meant that I needed to live this program. That when I'm living the program of Narcotics Anonymous, my life is in the care of God. That I'm doing because you know when my life ain't in God's care? When I run back. When I run back, then my life was in the care of the disease once again. That I'm once again caught into the destructive power. Because I heard Angel talk about last night also, I always knew right from wrong. Always. My spirit always told me what was right. But me wanting to be a part of and being connected, I always did what was wrong. And the recovery is about change. Recovery is about learning to obey and pay attention. And that was my third step in the beginning when I first got to Narcotics Anonymous, was to work the steps, was to pay attention to my spirit, was to do the next right thing. You know, but now, the third step, we got deeper. The third step, man, when I really began to realize and identify that my life is in God's care, how do you know when your life is in God's care? I begin to realize and identify when my life was things are in the care of God is when I ain't having anxiety attacks about it, that I can sleep about it, that I ain't angry and resentful about it, and I ain't afraid about it. When I'm not feeling those symptoms, then it's in God's care. I'm not afraid of using today. I can go past Senator Kirkpatrick and don't flip and turn because I put using in God's care, and you know what? He brought a sense of peace in my life. I know how to be a friend to a woman when she touches me. Because a real man, it observes. Somebody talks about recovery gives you the privilege to think after you be here a while. A real man don't go on what feels good all the time. He goes on what's right. I've learned to be a decent man in this program. I've been married 18 years in the fellowship. I have, just for today, up to this point, marriage has been successful for me. And my wife is a recovering addict also. Me and my wife smoke crack together. Give me that fucking step. Together. She turned tricks on me, and I knew she would turn tricks. You know what? But I understood. Because when I begin to really buy into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and if I'm really buying into this, and I'm really buying into this is a disease, and I'm really buying into that we are powerless, and that she was caught up in powerlessness, then I got to forgive her. Because I would have turned a trick. I would have wrote a bad check. And you know what? I did take this shit off of her. So, you know, the disease will make you, some stuff used to be so good that you had to do anything to get one more. So why would I hold resentments with my wife? See, when I begin to, like, work this program for real, and not just give a lip service, but go on the inside and compare myself to myself, to compare the power that the disease of addiction really had over me and can have over me today, I got to let people off the hook. I have to. Especially when people are saying that they're addicts. We don't want to let people off the hook. I had to let my wife off the hook in spite of what she did. And you know what? She let me off the hook because she began to work this program. And how I was able to work with my wife is because I was working with the fellas. It wasn't even that, it wasn't really sponsorship. Sponsorship guided me through the steps. Understanding of the steps came over a period of time. It was just learning a few principles that was in the steps. Doing the 4 steps just showed me how to take a look at myself for real. For the first time in my life, you're going to take an honest look at yours and check it out. Don't run from the steps. The steps say you will only scratch the surface the first time. God ain't going to give you no more than what he want to give you. So you can just wait till you want to. You only going to get what God gives you. He only gives us what we can handle. You can write some steps 25,000 times, and some stuff will not change because God ain't ready to make the change. He ain't ready to take you on a deeper level. But you need to be willing to look as far as you can look. Profound don't need to look deep. That's all profound means, to go deep, go on the inside. You know what I mean? Take a journey on the inside. You know, and that's what the step process is really all about, going on the inside. Step 4 didn't scare me. Step 5 did. That's why a lot of us won't do this step, because we got to tell another human being the exact nature of our wrong. And we think people are going to judge us. You know, but the 4 step gave me the ability to talk. I'm so grateful the process God put me on. I'm so grateful the people God put in my life. I'm so grateful that I didn't run. Don't run. If you're thinking about going a step, do the step and don't run. Do the step and ask God to help you to stand. Because when you stand, through standing, understanding comes. And I'm so grateful that I didn't run. And I didn't run back to what was old and familiar, slick, hip, and cool. Because that's a part of what we do, too, once the pain leaves. And this literature also taught me that when I do that, I'm giving into my illness once again. Fatal hipness and internal coolness is giving into the disease of addiction. I had to start identifying that, and I had to start identifying what George's real values and beliefs. What George's real values and beliefs really were, I wanted to be married. I wanted to be faithful. I wanted somebody that I could trust. You know what I mean? But to be a 10, to get a 10, you got to be a 10. You know, I couldn't go with self good. I had to, like, believe that I would be faithful, that it would change my wife. And it did. When I begin to, like, do the next right thing, I go to conventions all over this country. I am free. Can't nobody for 10 years say that I whispered in their ear and said anything inappropriate. Can't nobody for 10 years say they was in my hotel room during a convention. Can't nobody, some girls in treatment that lied and said that shit, but it ain't true. You know what I mean? I feel good. My self-esteem comes through doing for self. My self-esteem comes from working this program. My belief in God more comes through believing in God. Why do you think people believe in God? If God didn't show up and work for real, why would people trust and believe in him? There wouldn't be no need to believe in God if he didn't pay us off. I believe in God because I believe God will pay me, and he has. And he don't pay me based off an old idea about getting paid. He pays me, blesses me based off new things. I don't have a lot of money in the bank, but I have a son that's 17 that ain't never done drugs. They got a full scholarship at Villanova University to play football. That type of blessing I got. I got a 14-year-old daughter never had sex. It's all because I just believed in quit cheating, do the next right thing, and try to elevate myself and practice this program in all my affairs, and God continues to bless me. Another blessing, it ain't about me. It's about the power of this program in God. I run a treatment facility with an associate's degree. That's how powerful God is. That's all. I run a 50-bed facility for men and women that come from the Allegheny County Jail because people have seen inside of me. This book talks about in the symbol, the last thing will be lost is the stigma of an addict. The stigma is gone as a result of the program. When I put a suit and tie on, you don't know I'm an addict. But I crawled on the floor, and I sold my VCR, and I let my wife go out of there and turn a trick, but the stigma gets lost. I'm going to tell you something. Ain't nothing worse than a clean, no good SOB. It's because when you practicing in your defects, without a chemical, it's twice as bad. Because you can't blame it on the drug. Because it ain't about a drug. It ain't about a disease. It's about a character that needs to be reconstructed. And that's what I had to redefine cool in my life. I like being cool. I like wearing rocker wear. I like wearing jewelry. You know, I don't wear my pants hanging off my ass. I like to wear Air Jordans. But you know, I had to redefine cool. Redefining cool is I don't cheat. That's cool. It's cool to pay all your bills. It's cool to show up and keep a commitment. That's what cool is, really. But because those things bring greater feelings than any dope had ever brought me. It brings self-esteem to say I ain't cheated on my wife in 10 years. It feels good to say that. It feels good to say I run a treatment facility with a limited amount of education. It feels good to say that because I'm giving God the credit. It ain't me. I'm giving Narcotics Anonymous the credit because it really ain't me. I don't spell that well, and I learned to ask for a lot of help. The book told me the ideal state for me to be in is in a state of humility. And all humility really is accepting. Not admitting, but accepting what you have and what you don't have. Accepting it. And the things that I don't have, I got to raise my hand and ask for. What I begin to really identify and understand about myself that I am a house and that you are a house. Y'all hear Kathy H. talk about the house. But we're houses. And what are we housing? We're housing our spirits. What's in my spirit? Because my spirit is my foundation. My foundation is what I call upon in the hard times and in the good times. Is what my foundation is based in. And within my foundation is love, compassion, care, understanding, anger, resentment, jealousy, fear, obsession. All that shit's in my foundation. And my foundation is my spirituality. And my walls or my floors is the way I think. The way I feel affects the way I think. And the way I think affects the way my walls. And my walls is my feelings. The way I think affects my spirit. It affects the way I think. You know what? And check it out. My door is what I let in my life. You ever go on Center of Compassion, go on your set, you ever notice how you talking? When I get around a bunch of single guys looking at girls' butts, whatever I let in my house, whatever I let go into my foundation, it starts manifesting itself through my eyes and through my chimney. I be talking slick, acting slick. But when I let spiritual things in, I act and respond spiritually. I start identifying that stuff, man. The sixth step really is about embracing all parts of who you really are. See, once fear leaves me, ego and image always want to come back. And ego and image for me is the disease of addiction's best friend. Clean time is ego inflating. Speaking is ego inflating. Cadillacs is ego inflating. Letters behind your name is ego inflating. And the first step told me that shit ain't recovery, for real. Recovery is my ability to survive my sick thinking. Recovery is the ability to survive my emotions. You know how I survived my sick thinking and my emotions, practicing being honest, and the people that I got in my life? Support is the key to ongoing recovery. Step two said it's the key. You are step two. The literature is step two. When I'm caught up in obsession and compulsion and anger and resentment, I don't think about sponsorship. I don't think about steps. I don't think about what step I'm going to grab. You know, I run on autopilot. So what I do in the good times makes the difference what I'm going to do in the bad times. So if I'm sharing with people, learn how to be honest about who I am, keep my closet open for everybody to see in. I'm going to share with you the last thing the disease of addiction. They said we suffer from the disease of addiction. That means after you get clean time work steps, the disease ain't gone. We suffer from the disease of addiction. Addiction said it manifests itself in an obsessive and compulsive way that you've never had a problem with in life before. With almost 12 years clean, the disease of addiction manifests itself through a computer. And it manifests itself through pornography. You know what I mean? With 12 years, I'm a spiritual person, and I've never done that type of stuff. But I got a computer about a year ago. And, you know, I was intrigued with the computer. And on the computer, I had AOL, and it said, hi, you got mail. I like that shit. You know what I mean? And it was porn sites on there. And I had never been into pornography, never. I never believed in getting aroused and can't go all the way. So I never started that shit. I said, why did you get yourself all messed up for some shit you can't have? You know, for real, so why get started? That's a healthy way to think. But curiosity always killed the cat. The disease of addiction manifests itself through curiosity. It manifests itself through an illusion of control. See, having something on a porn site makes you believe you have control over your destiny. When I begin to read the new literature, and if you're an old timer, read the new stepping guide. You got a lot of valuable information in there. It tells you when you're caught up in the disease of addiction. It says when you're caught up in endless loopholes that lead you nowhere but physical, emotional, and spiritual decay, that you're suffering from the disease of addiction once again. So I was suffering. What? How do I know I'm suffering? When I ain't free. Because when my wife would come through the door after a hard day's work and I'm on the porn site, I'll cut the damn computer off real quick. If I was free, then I would leave the damn thing on. Huh? You ever notice when you got a driver's license, you don't worry about the police unless you're going over 85? Once you got a license and insurance, you don't worry about things that we used to worry about because we're free. We ain't caught up in something trying to get over. That's what this program is designed for, to free us up so we can live as responsible, productive members of society. But I knew I was in a disease of addiction, and the hit was I couldn't stop. And the illusion was I was in control because I never pay. I got all the free money. Free shit. That's an illusion of control. And anytime what they say, control is lost the moment it's suggested. And the only reason I was able to regain some control back into my life is as a result of practicing some honesty with claim time. Continue to stay in a humble posture and say the disease of addiction is manifesting itself through pornography in my life. Thank God I had discipline early in the game that, you know, because if I was a trickster, if I didn't have the ability to survive when me and my wife don't get along and run out in the streets and get with somebody to make myself feel better, see, I don't have to do that. I don't know how to work through my feelings as a result of this program. I don't know how to work through my feelings. So me and my wife don't get along all the time, and she don't sex me all the time. And I'm not dependent on that. She's about learning how to wean yourself off of things that you think you got to have. I ain't got to have everything outside of me. And I had to show my wife she can't control. Well, I talk about my relationship. I brought my relationship to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. When she was being a bitch, I told on her in here. And for real, the group was the most powerful vehicle for change. She knew she had to grow or go. And I knew that I was killing myself by being a people pleaser and keeping secrets. So I was going to grow or go too, because she was assertive and I was passive. And recovery is always about change. I had to learn to be assertive. And my wife needed to learn to be less assertive. You know what I mean? For real, for real. You know how she began to like de-escalate herself? She knew that I would tell on her. Because I bring everything to the group, because our literature says anything that affects my recovery is material for sharing in a meeting. You know, my relationship with material. Relationships kill most of us here. That's most of our biggest struggle. I've heard people share on it that's their biggest struggle. And the reason why it's not such a big struggle for me today is because of the relationships of the men that I had in my life. One thing about you don't want to let people sponsor us in the area of relationship. Anthony, the gay brother, sponsored me in relationship. He said, take your wife out. Learn how to take her out and buy her something. You know, you got to quit spending so much time with the fellas and learn how to take one day of the week and spend it with her. Listen to what she says. Sit there and listen. You know what I mean? He was telling, but the fellowship said he was trying to screw her and he was trying to steal her off of me. But he was telling me things that was helping me learn to be intimate with her. I was afraid of intimacy when I got here. Because you know why I was afraid of intimacy? The fourth step. Janet Jones broke my heart. And so we believe all the time. Why do you think we struggle in relationships and try to control? Because we don't want to be hurt again. Like it says, to take a risk, to love is to take another risk. And not to like have one foot in and one foot out, but to take a risk and go all the way and tell her that you love her. You know what I mean? And show her that you love her by not cheating on her. And praying about wanting to stay with her. You know what I mean? And like forgiving her when she don't do what you want her to do. And like let her lead you in areas that you weaken. See, my wife stands beside me, not behind me. My wife she enhances my life. She's an asset in my life. I don't think like, I was telling the fellas, men don't think like women. I'm here to share this with all you women. Men don't act like them men on fucking soap operas. We don't. We don't know how to talk about our feelings. My wife can walk by me looking good as hell. Something inside of me says, just don't tell her she's looking sexy. It's just ain't been taught to do that. But when my back's against the wall, I'll say, girl, you look so good. But it's about learning how to do it. It's about learning how to pay attention to that spirit inside of me. Because the spirit inside of me, I've seen Damon Wayman say that before, and it's real. I learn from everything, man. Anything can restore me to sanity. Anything can help me. We learn this information through the steps here. We're supposed to take this and go out and live. We ain't supposed to be living in NA. We're supposed to be living in the real world. This gives me the ability to live in the real world. This has showed me how to identify and relate. This is a spiritual, not religious program. It really is. But I don't want my kid to find God in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't want you to get mad at me, but I don't want my kid to get introduced to God here. He might not make it. I didn't get introduced to God here. I got put in front of God, and I was given a choice. And I believe giving my kids a choice. Because you know what? When at the end of the road, in Narcotics Anonymous, what was there left to do? It was to take the last mask off and go on that spiritual journey. It's a deep thing, man. And it happens in everybody's time. And I ain't violating nobody's tradition. It's about finding the God of your understanding and learning to depend upon it, learning to understand it, learn how it understands you. You know what I mean? I became more freer when I began to do that. When I made a spiritual commitment to a God of my understanding, it wasn't undone yet. And I'm not a religious thumper, toter. I don't know none of that stuff. But I knew that I needed to do some more work spiritually. And when I took a risk, freedom came again. This is a deep program, man. The more I uncovered my spirit through the step process, the more in tune to my spirit that I became. I begin to read the 11th step, and it says step 11 talks about God will put his will in front of you. He'll make it so evident that you can't deny it. So evident. It was a point in time, some people told me that I had to do some things to save my children. And to save my children, I was willing to do them things. You know what I mean? Because that's what it really comes about. It's about moving away from self-centeredness, going toward God-centeredness. So I'm not an entertainer, and I'm not here to share a bunch of bad, slimy stuff because I don't do that anymore. The slimiest, close to slimy it got, I masturbate every now and then. For real, I do. It's a form of control. You ain't got to be no people pleaser. You ain't got no expectations. And it ain't hurting nobody. And you ain't got to feel rejected if you don't perform up to serious peace. We put so much in sex. We put so much value in a two-minute act. We try to enhance it. You remember how we was getting high? We try to put the wine and we just try to enhance. Crack goes like that. Huh? Cocaine go like that. It just go real fast. And we be trying to prolong that stuff. We be doing the same thing with sex. Sex is a serious piece. Sex is a spiritual thing. And we abuse a spiritual thing. Sex is touching the two spirits. Why do you think it's so hard to struggle in a relationship with somebody ain't no damn good, but sex is good? It's because your spirit's touched. That's why they say the spirit is the first to go and the last to come back. So when you connect with somebody spiritually that ain't no good for you through sex, even though they done abused you know you always want to go back and hold on to that thing that you had. It's that spiritual connection that you had. That's why I value my spirit. I have to protect my spirit. You don't test your recovery and test your spirit. You protect your spirit. Once you've identified your spirit, you learn to nurture your spirit. Because when my spirit is gone, I say, fuck it, and then I'm gone. I really realized that as a result of this program, man. This is a powerful program. This program is designed to bring forth a metamorphosis. And I always share to people, man, that a caterpillar has a limited view on reality. We talk about Narcotics Anonymous, vision without limit, right? It says the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. I had to start realizing I was just like a caterpillar when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I had a limited view on reality. I had a limited perspective on life. And what I really had to do was get into that cocoon. See, the caterpillar volunteers to get in the cocoon. He volunteers to do the work, to wrap himself up real tight. So I had to volunteer to work the steps. Sponsorship don't matter. You don't get nothing when a sponsor makes you do something. You get something because you're looking for something. I didn't know how to roll a perfect joint until I really wanted to. I couldn't cook cocaine up until I really wanted to. You know what I mean? You gotta want spiritual development. You gotta want spiritual growth. And it ain't gonna come because of sponsoring and threw some shit at you. It's gonna come because you have a desire for it. For real, for real. You know what I mean? I realized that today. I've lost sponsorship. I've damaged people as a result of trying to control them. I ran them out of my life. Trying to be a step Nazi. You know, we talk about how NA was when we first came around. I was here when it was only one table also. I've been here almost 12 years. NA has blown up in 12 years. And I believe, for real, personally, through my own experience, we said all that shit to each other because we were just afraid to use. So when a person's afraid, how does it manifest itself through anger and control? But this is a big fellowship now, and this dual diagnosed people will fuck you up around here now. They got Uzis and automatic weapons and stuff. And they just ain't taking that stuff. You know what? Because recovery is progressive, just like addiction. It's constantly evolving. It still works. People still staying clean. People still working the steps. People are getting their families back. People getting their self-respect back. You know, they getting it just like we got it. God gives it to us and gives it to them when they're ready to get it. So I don't try to control my sponsees. If you don't work no damn steps, then don't work none. I'm going to be here waiting for you. I'm going to work mine, though. Because I know there's benefits in working the steps. So I'm going to work mine. I just eventually, and I'm going to tell you something about this fellowship, too. And what I really believe, that if everybody stayed, wouldn't be no room. Some of us move through this process. My sponsor that I had moved through this process. And I believe if you're doing something spiritual and you're connected to spiritual people, you continue to stay on the journey growing spiritually. You know what I mean? So they say, look, we don't judge as harshly. We learn not to judge so harshly. My sponsor moved on, but he's doing something. My old sponsor's moved on, and he's doing something spiritual. He said he's going to put more time into what he believes in. He's going to invest more in that, and he's connected. He said, George, I've been doing this for 35 years. I've been clean for 16. You know, it's time for God has told me. Because who knows what God tells somebody to do? For real. I remember I smoked cigarettes from the age of 13. I said I was never stop smoking no cigarettes. Fuck y'all, I'm going to smoke. I ain't smoking no more. Remember y'all said we was going to smoke weed and have our grandkids roll them up and we're going to throw joints in our coffins? You don't know where God going to take you and changing you. So I've learned as a result, I've gotten in this cocoon and learned to see through a spirituality. I see a bigger picture on reality, and the whole hit is I ain't got no control. The God is in control of all this. And I just need to be a living example. I need to be a manifestation of my higher power. I didn't cuss too much, did I? But I need to be a living example of my higher power. I don't supposed to be a higher power. I'm just supposed to be a power greater. A power greater is a person with more information. That's all. Power is knowledge. And the greatest gift for me is the knowledge of who I am. That's the greatest gift. And I get more knowledge about who I am as a result of praying and working the steps. I get more knowledge about who I am is by not putting a ceiling on God, what God can do. That God can talk to me through Buddha, can talk to me through Islam, can talk to me through, my sponsor's Islamic. I'm not. One thing about Narcotics Anonymous is it allowed me, because people in religion put ceilings on things. They said if you don't do it this way, that you can't get nowhere. See, that's being closed-minded. And they allowed me to be open to learn from black people, white people, Christian people, Buddhist people, Jewish people. That's the beauty of this program. You need to realize where you at. We got something special here. It has opened us up and allowed us to be some of the best people on earth. Because I really realize an addict with an obsession gets the job done. But what are you obsessed with is the whole key. Because you're going to be obsessed with something. Are you obsessed with growing spiritually? Some good things is going to happen for you. If you're obsessed with being a gangster, some fucked up stuff's going to happen. You're obsessed with being a lover, your life is going to become unmanageable. No doubt. My experience. So, you know, it was a real honor for me to come to this retreat. I needed this retreat. Because the broader the base, the higher point of freedom. As a result of this program, I'm a responsible, productive member of society, but I'm super sensitive. And that out there runs my batteries down. Firing people hurts. Sending people back to jail that you've got a spiritual and emotional connection with hurts. But it's what I have to do because it's what I'm supposed to do. Because I'm a responsible, productive member of society. And if I showed up to take what they say, that much is given, much is required. So the more is given, more is required. So what do I have to do to continue to do this? It's requiring more time with God. It requires more principles. It requires God. To run a whole ship, to have employees under you, if they don't listen to you when you walk out the room, it requires God. Because I'll snap out and call them all kind of MFs. And then I'll get fired. So I realize that, man, the more God gives me, the more I need him to be able to maintain it. So take a risk. How free do you want to get? For real, for real. In all areas of your life. I don't have to chase my wife. I don't have to smell her underwear. I don't have to star 69. You know, I don't have to bring her past up. You know, I don't have to do that today. You know what I mean? Because NA has given me enough self-esteem and self-worth. God has showed me enough signs that, George, you are worthy, in spite of what your head says. All I have to do is take a proper inventory, and all you got to is take a proper one, too. We all blessed up in here. Because all you got to do is close your eyes and think of what it really could be like. This is a blessing. We are blessed to be in a room full of men and women that's loving and caring about each other. We are blessed to be people that come from where we come from and to be doing something different. And all you got to do is just want more of what the program has to offer you. As a result of this program, and all my dreams have come true. I ain't got no more. All I do is show up for life. Because what I begin to understand is the difference between a journey and a trip. A trip is the estimated time of arrival. You ever notice when you don't get somewhere or think you're supposed to be somewhere? I got 10 years clean. I don't believe I'm supposed to be doing this. And you be tripping. That's where that come from. Expectation on being somewhere. And you don't get there when you expect it, you freak out. It's called tripping out. One thing about a journey, you don't know when you're going to get there. Huh? On a journey, you know you're leaving from somewhere and you need to be going to something better because somebody even put you, gave you some hope. Hope always puts you on a journey. Huh? To be going somewhere better. But one thing about a journey, you can't put no time on it. But every time you get tired. But one thing about a journey, you get tired. And you want to give up. And you want to go back. But every time you get ready to go back, you ever notice God give you a sign? What's the sign on this journey called recovery? That person that stood up with 20 years? Oh, my man stood up with 18 years. That's a sign that it can be done. In Narcotics Anonymous. If you sat here and listened to some of the messages, those are signs. That's God telling us things can be done. We can do whatever it is that we want to do if we just believe. If you just have hope and stay on the journey, don't put no time on it. Man make time, not God. So all we do is, because God told us, make meetings, stay away from old people, places, and things, don't pick up the first one, and keep coming back. And that's how we stay on the journey and help somebody along the way. And miraculous things will happen for you. You know what I mean? So, and it's all a ritual. What we do is a ritual. Because one thing about a ritual produces an out-of-body experience. Remember that ritual smoking that coat? Yeah. Remember that out-of-body experience when you sold your VCR in a day? That's an out-of-body experience. That shit ain't normal. Huh? That ain't normal to sell everything in your house as a result of practicing something over and over and over again. Huh? But check out, practice a healthy ritual. The 11th step said you'll find yourself performing tasks far beyond your capacity. It's as a result of practicing this program, which is a ritual. And part of the ritual is making meetings, staying away from people, places, and things, working the steps and trusting in God of your understanding and helping somebody. That is a ritual we practice. And you find yourself doing things you could never do before, taking you places you've never been before. This is a ritual. Study this stuff. This is a text to be studied. So it was an honor and a privilege for me to come share with you. I'm going to keep coming back because I love what this program has done for me. Thanks for allowing me to share.